Welcome to the Ultimate Love Life Makeover, Dating Mastery for Women. I'm Cammie Ellen, your host, and I'm so happy you're back here with us. Each day during this virtual summit, you will learn tips and tools from our world-class experts on all things related to dating and attraction. This wisdom will help you date and relate with unshakable confidence and become a woman who can inspire a great love. We are standing for you to create nothing less than lasting, luscious love, your ultimate love life makeover. So I'm really pleased to introduce my next guest expert, Michelle Atlas, who will be talking today on the topic, the money-love connection. There are undeniable parallels between the way that we spend and the way that we love. And Michelle is going to help you learn how your subconscious money patterns may be playing out in your love relationship so you can break free of your conditioning and empower yourself in both love and prosperity. This is such a great topic. But before I bring on Michelle, let me tell you more about her. Michelle Atlas empowers strong, creative women to own their worth, so they can create sustainable businesses, careers, and relationships around who they are. Michelle is a coach, a teacher, a speaker, and a writer. She is an ICF professional certified coach, a Newfield certified coach, a certified resiliency facilitator, and a sacred money archetype certified coach. With intuition honed throughout her lifetime, years of spiritual practice, and a huge transformational toolbox, she will help you discover courage you did not know you have, so you can create change you never thought possible in your relationship to money, love, and yourself. So welcome, Michelle.
Hi, Cammie. So happy to be here. Thank you.
So happy to have you with us to talk about this incredible topic, because I know so many people struggle in both these areas, and I love that you're bringing them both together. So what is this money-love connection? Can you explain the connection between money and love?
Sure, absolutely. So, you know, I give a lot of talks on the psychology of money, on how, on one's internal relationship to money, and I noticed, you know, several years ago that as I was describing that our relationship to money is reflected in how we give and receive to ourselves and to each other, what we value and invest in, you know, what we believe we deserve and what we even believe is possible for ourselves to have and achieve, I realized one day that if I interchanged the word love for money, that everything I just said would still make perfect sense.
Oh.
Right. It was a real aha moment for me. And I noticed that, you know, there was just this undeniable connection. And so, you know, I began to kind of peel back that onion. And I realized that both of these key areas of life, money and love, are huge portals to our self-worth, to our sense of worthiness, and, you know, to where we fall on the continuum regarding our self-love, you know, where is that barometer falling? And then, you know, I began to do conscious couples, money mastery intensives. And the very first couple that sat down in front of me, you know, I used to begin my intensives, and I still do those intensives. I used to begin those intensives with a question, you know, to tell me what your sticking point is with money as a couple, so that we can, you know, hold that as we navigate the journey. And the very first couple that sat down in front of me, when I said, "What's your money sticking point?" the man immediately said, "I want more hugs." Mm-hmm. And the woman said, "I want him to stop spending so much." And, you know, I just thought, wow, is this going to be a juicy conversation?
Oh,
and
yeah.
Once again, it was like, and so the whole intensive, which was a 3-hour intensive, revolved around this weaving of money and love and how inextricable they truly are, you know. And so the conversation was, you know, equally about love and how they're showing up in their love dynamic, and how money's playing into that. So what we learned, I mean, just, you know, in a nutshell, because this really illustrates the point, is that, you know, when he, that he had a great need to feel appreciated. That was a big value for him. When he didn't feel appreciated, he would overspend to fill that void. And then she would get really irritated because he was overspending. And when she got irritated, she would withhold affection.
Oh, wow.
So I couldn't answer the question any better than to give you that example, right?
Oh, and these are the kinds of things that we normally wouldn't think about when out there trying to find love or create possibilities for love. What you just said, I mean, that illustrates it so beautifully. You're right, that idea of feeling like I'm not getting the kind of affection and love that I'm wanting, so I'm spending to compensate for that. I know probably so many people listening can resonate with that in different ways.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And, you know, there are as many patterns as there are, you know, unique people. So we're all different. There are many different ways that these things show up and get expressed, you know. I mean, some people spend too little. Some hold on to you know, out of fear of not enough. No matter how much I have, it'll never be enough. And so they tend to play that out in love and in other ways, right? And then the spending to fill a void is more of a common pattern, but it's certainly not the only one.
Well, how did you come to find this as a topic of interest? Where does your passion for this topic come from? Is there any personal significance for you?
Yes, that's the right. There's huge personal significance for me, actually. And so, you know, as a coach, as a transformational coach, it's like we're always growing and learning and evolving with our clients, right? And so, you know, as I, over the years of doing this deep transformational work with other people, it began to shine a brighter and brighter spotlight on my own journey. And so I grew up with a very restrictive and denying mother. She was very denying and restrictive with both herself and me, her only child. And so when I wanted anything, I got this, you know, do you want it or do you need it kind of a question, right? And so I learned very early on it was not okay to want anything. And so I grew up with a very distorted, confused, warped sense around what it was okay to want. And I ended up disowning and repressing a lot of my desires because they were criticized and it wasn't how I got love. So fast forward, you know, many years, I got married in my 20s. I married somebody who was also, you know, I hadn't done, you know, done a massive amount of work on myself over these years, but I hadn't done a whole lot at that point. And so I married somebody who was a lot like my mother and was really kind of emotionally abusive on most days, except holidays, birthdays. He would buy me these beautiful, beautiful, he was an artist and he bought me these beautiful, artistic, amazing gifts that were like right on for me. And so for like that 24-hour period, I would feel very loved. I would notice that I felt like incredibly safe all of a sudden when on a day-to-day basis, I was not feeling safe with him. Oh. And so I, you know, just felt, you know, loved and safe and nurtured for a very brief period. And then, you know, the next day or so, life would go back to usual. Fast forward again, you know, I found myself, I finally mustered the courage to leave the marriage. That was a very empowering move for me. And found myself debt-free at that point, mid-30s, debt-free, a lot of credit cards, great credit. And for the first time in my life, you know, I discovered the art of shopping to fill a void.
Right.
And so it was like a miracle for me the first time that I used a credit card and, you know, just got something that I couldn't afford and it was mine. it was like magic. And so, you know, what happened was, of course, over a period of time, I accrued quite a bit of debt. And I noticed that when I shopped, that same thing would happen. I'd feel this incredible feeling of love. It was a real high. I felt nurtured and fulfilled by whatever I purchased. And then as I began to accrue debt, I would, the credit card statements, I'd look at them and I'd feel self-loathing and really awful, you know, about myself. And it became this like pendulum, good girl, bad girl, swinging back and forth, very disempowering. And no matter what I did, no matter what kind of, you know, strategies I tried to implement, you know, good money management strategies or whatever, they were not sustainable for me because there was something else driving this behavior from within and I hadn't connected with that yet. I ended up bumping into the money archetype work, you know, several years into this whole conundrum. And what happened for me was when I saw, you know, the archetypes are patterns of characteristics that exist in the deep collective unconscious. And these money archetypes really show you like a profile of, you know, your nature, your money personality. And they also highlight and shine a spotlight on the subconscious drivers of, you know, of your money decisions and all this sort of thing. And so when I saw my profile, it became so clear to me that, you know, that number one, I could not have done things any differently until I understood these subconscious drivers. And number two, I really saw that my personality in general was very different from my mother's. My nature was very different. And so what happened was, in seeing this, I had a very deep and profound experience of self-forgiveness and self-acceptance. And it was really a spiritual experience. It was one of those, you know, really deep, you know, moments and extremely meaningful. And from that point on, I mean, literally, I'm not one of these people that, you know, says abracadabra, okay, you're transformed, you know, forevermore. Right. But really, like the next day, it was such a profound experience that the very next time I went, because I know transformation takes, you know, is multi-layered. But the very next day when I went shopping, I was drawn to something, you know, beautiful that was beyond my means. I had this very powerful voice came up from, you know, again, from a, you know, very deep place, said, I'm enough. And when I heard the words, I'm enough, right, and they didn't come from my mind. It wasn't like when we choose to do a mantra or an affirmation, but we're not really deeply rooted in it. This came from a very deep place. And it just transformed. In that moment, I had the experience of nurturance and safety and fulfillment. All the things I always got from shopping came from not purchasing the thing that was too expensive. So I had this like reverse experience. And from that point on, it's really never been the same. There's been like a natural barometer where I'm able to experience a much more genuine sense of well-being by making choices that are in alignment for me.
Oh, that's such a powerful transformation. Such an example of what's possible.
Yeah.
Because I think what you're talking about is going from this kind of external validation to this deeply rooted sense of your worthiness, your value coming from within. Yes. and transforming that experience about, you said about the, do you want it or do you need it? And I think if we're going through life with that kind of script, then it makes so much sense that we would start to kind of shut down our own kind of inner compass or our own inner intuition about what our needs even are. Because if it's like, well, if I don't really need to honor my needs anyway, so then, you know, starting to get out of touch. And it sounds like through that whole transformational journey, you ended up getting back to that just authentic depth of connection with your own needs, and that you're so worthy of having them, and that you're enough. And that's such a powerful inspiration, I think, for anyone listening, that that's possible to make that shift. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it did feel like kind of a miracle in the moment. It was something I had longed so deeply for. And yes, it's absolutely possible. And of course, all of those things you just mentioned, you know, were playing out when they were not in balance. They were playing out wildly in my love relationships and, right, and not, you know, not necessarily knowing what I needed, not being able to feel entitled or deserving of giving voice to it when I did know. All of those, and so all of that has been, you know, a transformation that has thus, you know, since occurred as well. Just another linkage, you know, between the money and love. What I've learned, you know, is that the way we do money is the way we do a whole lot of other things, and love being, you know, kind of at the top of the list, but many other things.
So, what do you recommend? So, if someone's listening to what you just shared, your own story and the story about the couple, how can you help them to see maybe some blind spots that they're not in touch with right now that you see playing out in both money and love to help women who are wanting to create this love life makeover? What are some blind spots that maybe they don't see that you can help them tune into?
Yeah, sure. There are so many possibilities. So I want to start by stressing on that note that, really the love journey, the whole, love sharing, giving and receiving love with another human being is, it must to do it in a way that is lasting and deeply, really fulfilling and truly generative, truly creative. It has to begin with the self-love. Connection. And kind of all good things come from self-love, and it's not for the faint of heart, but and it's also not as difficult as one thinks. So a couple of tips, I guess the first one that I usually give is to notice where you are triggered with both money, in both money and love. I mean, either one is going to kind of give you cues as to where you're triggered in the, what's happening in the other. So notice where you have an emotional reaction to your own behavior in money or love, with money or love, or somebody else's, where you find yourself saying, "I can't believe, they blah blah blah, whatever, or you find yourself particularly self-critical." And so in those, and then you want to get really curious. So you don't want to judge, if you're being judgmental of yourself or someone else, you don't, this is not about judging that. This is not about saying, "Oh, that's wrong." That's not what I mean by noticing. You want to just really be mindful and know that there's a gold mine of wisdom within your triggers. And so usually there are shadows, meaning parts of ourselves, beliefs, and parts of ourselves that we've disowned or repressed, usually because somewhere in our, when we were young, from birth to about age 7, we receive a tremendous amount of conditioning, and we learn very early on what's lovable and what's not in our circle of influence. And the things that we're not receiving a lot of praise for, we will typically just kind of say, "Okay, I won't be that way then. I won't think that way. I won't feel those feelings." So when I'm talking about triggers, typically that's an indicator that there's some part of you that's really begging to come back to life, that's begging to be seen, understood, integrated, expressed, and perhaps it's one of those parts or beliefs that you disowned really early in life. So you want to get curious and just, allow yourself to kind of question, what's this really about, and really just, explore what kind of wisdom and insight might come through when you're open and embracing of your own triggers. Because we live in these habitual patterns, and we feel like victims of them. They just happen to us, it feels like. But they're happening from within. And the moment you shine a spotlight, it's just like, if you shined a flashlight into a dark corner, all the insects might come crawling out. It's the same principle, All of our shadows will come out and reveal themselves and provide very important information. So that's one of my best tips, that people start to have light bulb moments when they begin to do that.
Oh, well, it's so interesting because as you're talking, I'm thinking that, over the years, in the different decades to now, there, in terms of money and gender roles, they've really changed a lot. Back in the 1950s, it was really sort of like, oh, well, the man's the breadwinner, the woman's the homemaker, he brings home the bacon, she provides the home. And over time, obviously, we're now in a time where that does still occur, or it could be the opposite, where the man stays home, the woman's working, he's taking care of the children, or both are earning, or perhaps the woman earns more than the man, or vice versa. And I think that it can kind of be a little confusing for both gender, for both men and women, to try and figure out, well, how do I deal with the money, with the dating? And, you know, there's always that question about, well, should the man pay, or, you know, whoever instigated the date, should they pay? And then once we are together, how do we deal with our money? I just talked to somebody the other day, and she was talking about feeling in a dating relationship, and the person that she's dating is generous with money and trips and things like that, and that she has a really hard time with that, and she feels like she has to, you know, kind of contribute equally, to the point where she's really kind of making a difficult time for herself with her finances, because she feels, you know, guilty. So what do you say about this whole conundrum with where we are in these times, to how a woman who's out there dating can handle money and dating and love in that sense?
Yeah, I love that you brought this up. I'm so happy you did. On my walk this morning, this came up as, you know, as I was contemplating this interview, and I thought it'd be great to talk about it. So that's perfect. So first of all, I think, and I know that you know, as a love coach, have, you know, I've heard you share wisdom on this as well, where I know there is a lot of concern about, you know, who should pay for what, you know, and particularly on first dates. You know, I see a lot of this in the various chat spots, you know, about people having very strong opinions. You know, if the guy doesn't pay, never speak to him again, or if the, you know, if the woman does this, never, whatever. And I think that my personal opinion is that, you know, we're getting a little too caught up in some of the almost like logistical kind of components to connecting with a new human being. And I think that, so first off, I would say, when we're talking about first dates and we're talking about an initial connection, that, and this is where I've heard you comment, you know, we always want to be focusing on how we feel with the other person more than anything, more than words, more than who's paying for what, you know, more than almost anything. You know, what does it feel like, you know, on that kind of deeper, beyond the mind, beyond all the narratives level, to just be in the presence of this person? You know, does it feel good? Do you feel safe? Do you feel inspired? Do you feel, you know, a sense of well-being or not, whatever? So that's number one. Number two, you gave a great example there with the woman you just described, you know, it's when someone's being really generous to her, to you, and giving you money, maybe more than you have to give back. So that's a loaded kind of topic, because that enters into, well, I guess I'll say first, I don't think there's any right or wrong about any of it. I think that, you know, we live in a time when the sky's the limit in terms of how we create our relationships. And so what works is what works for both of you. Mm-hmm. If it works for both of you, then it works. Mm-hmm. You know, and then it's good. And so that involves, though, you know, very often some tricky conversations, you know. And so that involves, you know, learning some generative conversation skills, you know. How do you open up? And what I found is that a lot of the same skills required to have, you know, an effective money conversation are required to have all kinds of effective conversations in the love arena. They require the same, you know, kind of consciousness. So I think that for women in particular, and I know that, you know, we've got all these different dynamics and different kinds of couples. For women, what my experience is that with women in particular, words like deserving, words like permission are just hot words. They're loaded. If I just, in any of my coaching groups, if I just say, hey, you know, what happens for you when I say the word deserve? We could have a 4-hour conversation. Drop of a hat, right? So I'm hearing, like in the example that you gave, you know, I guess I'm hearing a couple of things. I'm hearing a missing conversation, you know, because it sounds like she's feeling maybe somewhat, you know, some questions and maybe somewhat uncomfortable receiving this generosity and wondering how much she owes back, but maybe it hasn't been openly discussed. I don't know. So that would be one thought. A second thought is that it sounds like it's stirring up for her some of these issues around deserving and equality and reciprocity. And so those are all very multi-layered onions, you know, that are so valuable, such valuable spots to dig deeper and explore. So that, because otherwise, it may start out showing up in the money dynamic, which is often how things, again, it's just a beautiful mirror for so much. But, you know, if there are questions about reciprocity and giving equally in this and deserving, then they'll show up in other places in a love relationship too. And, you know, best to begin having those conversations early on to clear the air.
Yeah, you're right. And I love what you're saying, because it's, you know, when it comes to love and dating, and there's this idea that, you know, that I hear a lot that, oh, well, you know, he or she, whoever you're dating, whatever gender you're dating, well, gave me this. And so I need to make a note of that, and I'll need to give back, you know, at a later time, like it has to be equal. And it's this idea of being open to receiving, as you said, like this idea of deserving, and people start to get uncomfortable about that, but just the allowing yourself to receive, like you said in your example, that it was just that sense of like, oh, I'm enough, like I am worthy, I am valuable, and it's okay to allow myself to receive without having to right away, oh, okay, well now let me give you something, you know. Even just as simply as a compliment, I think sometimes as women, we have a hard time like, oh, you like my shirt? Well, I like your shoes. Like, you know, instead of just, you know, instead of just saying, oh, thank you so much. Just thank you. And when it comes to this idea with the whole money thing, it's so loaded, whether it's a dinner or a trip or whatever, a bouquet of flowers, just allowing to just receive and noticing like, why is that so anxiety provoking? What is that in me that I'm, you know, challenged to receive? So I love that you're sharing this.
Yeah. And I love what you just said too, actually, because receiving is a huge, you know, domain of challenge, like you said, for so many. And I just wrote an article a while back on it because I just felt so called to, because most, you know, particularly women, but not exclusively, you know, so many of us are so good at giving. You know, we were raised to give and to identify with that, meaning that we're a good person. We equate generosity, you know, exclusively with being the giver often. Yeah. And the thing about receiving and so being able to be a receiver in a relationship, in a love relationship, is a very, very big deal, like you said. And receiving requires, many people don't realize this, that receiving requires a greater level of vulnerability than giving does.
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
It actually does. And I think that that's partly unconsciously. I know for myself, you know, in the past, before I, you know, had done this work and made these connections, I didn't realize, I think that I had avoided being a better receiver because it made me feel so vulnerable, made me feel so open. And the fact is that to receive, there actually has to be room and, you know, room for something to get in. So, you know, it means like there's usually some letting go involved. There's usually like, well, how am I going to make room, you know, so that there's room for something, like what, and it even kind of enters into that whole domain of thinking that you need to know everything in advance. Well, then nothing can get in, nothing new can get in. No new experiences, no new information. So, you know, we get to be learners in love too. And we there's this allowance that needs to happen to be able to receive. That's really powerful.
So I'm wondering if you think that this is connected to intimacy, because as you said, if you can't receive and be vulnerable, then there's not that space there. And And as you're talking, it kind of sounds to me like this would be related to the allowance of the creation of intimacy. What do you think about that?
Big time. I think it's right on. Yeah, I think it's just massively related. It's totally related. Yeah. So here are some ways in relationships that sort of brings this to mind, ways in relationships that when we don't feel like we're enough, it's very difficult to receive. When we don't feel, what happens is when we don't believe, and that's why it's so crucial, and that this all ties into the self-love that I mentioned earlier. So when we don't feel like we're enough, some of the ways that will show up is we'll do too much. Like we might talk too much. Oh. We might spend too much. We might think too much. We might, whatever it is. And so the too much again makes it so there's no room for anyone else to enter, you know, emotionally. Like again, if we're talking too much, nobody else can enter with their words. You know, if we're, doing too much, nobody else can do anything for us so that we can, gift us something in the form of actions or behaviors that we can receive. So, being receptive is a very powerful, it's a practice. I have to actually, for myself, the way that I began to transform the tendency to overgive and underreceive was I really had to practice it real consciously. Like, and to this day, at times I absolutely have to remind myself to just, slow it down and allow the help to come from another person if I need it, allow the love to be given to me and just really receive it. We can go through our whole lives being very loved and not actually experience it if we're not able to be receptive.
Oh, that's gorgeous. Yeah, powerful, powerful stuff here. So for anybody listening who is really wanting to empower both their relationship to love and to money, they're really resonating with everything that we're sharing here. What tips can you share with them so that they can achieve more fulfilling results in both of these areas?
Yeah. Well, I'll share a little practice that actually is powerful.
Oh, great.
And then, so this is a tangible little, practice that one could start doing, immediately. And that, there's so much incredible information in our bodies, and we tend to forget and kind of run around like from here up,
Yes. Living and from the neck up.
Yeah. From the neck up. Exactly. Yeah. Right. Exactly. And right. The phrase, chicken without a head, it comes from real life experience. So I love practices that help take us more deeply into our bodies. And so something, again, that I do, and I've lived everything I'm sharing today and really, do all of these practices and this work with myself as well. So when you place your hands anywhere on your body, but particularly the solar plexus, your heart or your cheeks, the cheeks of your face, wherever they feel called, I call those three power spots. And because when we are experiencing touch in any of those three areas on a neurological, on a brain level, we tend to register that as support and affection, even if it's our own touch. And so the moment we register that sense of support and affection, we trigger oxytocin, which is the brain chemical responsible for safety and nurturance and connection, all the things we want in a relationship. So it starts by, placing your hands wherever you feel like on your body in that way and, closing your eyes. And really what, when I'm challenged with love or money, the question that I ask myself, and you can ask yourself anything when you have your hands placed like this and you're breathing and slowing down, eyes closed, anything that comes to you was probably going to have some wisdom in it. But the question that I love to ask is, what's mine? What, in other words, what in this experience is really about me?
Yeah.
Because we project so much, you know, it's human. That's what the mind is designed to do very well. And so particularly in with both money and love, but I'm going to just speak to love in the moment, because, you know, it gets to be such a slippery slope sometimes with another human being. And it's very challenging for most of us to sort out, you know, what's theirs, what's mine, where do I need to own a deeper level of responsibility? You know, where do I need to have a conversation? Where don't I need to have a conversation? You know, can get really complex. And so I have just found this practice so powerful, because you're in the safety of your own body and your own self-connection. And when you ask that question with a genuine heart, I mean, incredible information that you literally, you know, could be like, you know, banging your head against the wall trying to figure out will come to you through that vehicle that may not come otherwise. So that's, you know, that's one really powerful tip that I would have. And I think the other piece is that it's really important we have to look at the subconscious, with the messaging. You know, when we're young and we receive all this conditioning, this unbelievable percentage, like, you know, 96% or something like that, recedes into, you know, the unconscious when we're, you know, eight years old or 9 years old, and becomes the subconscious drivers. And so it's really important that we don't, when we just focus on, you know, external strategies, like, you know, don't do this and do that and wear this and don't wear that and, you know, always pay or never pay or whatever it is, you know, we're kind of missing the boat on this this deeper place, that because the brain, you know, as we now know, is plastic. So we can change anything, and it's not all that difficult, but we can't change what we can't see.
Yes.
So we have to see it first, and then changing it's actually quite easy. The challenge can be, you know, getting that spotlight on the right stuff. So it's there, and there's a lot of, you know, involved in that, but I think we can't minimize that particular part of the work.
Oh, yeah, I that's so true about the plasticity of the brain, and that we can continue to make those shifts and those new connections and have it be permanent, no matter how old we are. That's really good inspiration, encouragement around this. And I'm wondering, what advice can you give to women who are out there dating in terms of what to think about or what to look for when they are out there and going out on different dates with different people? And because I'm thinking, you know, if a woman is out there and let's say, you know, oh, I'm a saver, he's a spender, or, you know, I am a generator and I just have no problem generating income and he's struggling earning income, or vice versa, just the different patterns that people are bringing into partnership. What do you want to share with women in terms of their potential partner about things to sort of, you know, red flags that maybe they should avoid, or maybe things that they shouldn't be so closed-minded about? Like, where's the barometer of, yeah, you know what, give this a chance, or be open-minded here, or maybe this isn't such a good place to be investing your time and your energy? Any thoughts on that?
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. Well, so a couple of thoughts come to mind. You know, one is, when we say how we do money is how we do love, and how we do love is how we do money. You know, and I work with couples as well as individuals, you know, on the money love journey. And so it's not so much about, I mean, what might be a red flag to you in the moment may just be that this person does have some opposites, you know, maybe where the person is really different from you. So there are many different ways to approach that. One way would be to say, well, you know, I know what I can tolerate. I know what's important to me. And, you know, like, if you're a saver and you're with somebody who's making snap impulsive decisions about love, like, you know, you're instantly it for them. And then you see them instantly, you know, spending a lot of money on, so, because I see these kinds of patterns, you know, then they're instantly making an impulsive decision about, you know, that involves money. And, you know, if that's a turn off to you, you know, you want to know, you're going to start to see, you know, my hope after listening to our conversation is that people will start to see the connection between money and love a little bit more clearly. So you could say, well, that's a red flag. I know that that kind of person isn't for me. Or you could say, they've got a different relationship. You know, there's something different driving their decisions than what drives my decisions. You could say, gosh, I'm such a saver. It's, you know, I'm so afraid of not having enough. I wonder, you know, they don't seem to be afraid. I'm kind of curious. This is interesting. So, and then that could become at some point, you know, a conversation and not necessarily a black and white, you know, no way, they're not for me. If you're really enjoying other, if they are matching your values and you're feeling really, you're enjoying them and some of the other key components are, in, you know, are showing up that you really desire, then maybe it's an exploration.
You know. Yeah, that's really good feedback. Really good feedback about that, because I talk to women who I think decide in an instant that, oh no, it needs to make X number of dollars or needs to be this or needs to be that. And there might be some other ways to look at it and also to look deeper to the qualities that are really, really important to you, and that there might be some, I love what you said, that there might be some insight to your own relationship with money and love if you're open to seeing, well, let's see how is this person looking at love and money, and maybe I can learn something from it, as opposed to just making a snap decision or judgment about it. That's a really, it's a really good point.
Yeah, well, because I, you know, I work with couples, I see the conversation change. So, you know, sometimes I have a couple sitting or, you know, with me that are identical. So, for example, you know, and so I see how it can change either way. So, you know, in one time I was working with a couple that both had the same archetypal profile, and they were both really intense savers, and it was fear driven in both cases. So they never argued about money, but they also were having no fun. They had tons of money because they were saving it. They had no fun. And no, they barely could go, you know, let themselves go out to dinner for like a modest dinner, you know? And so, you know, but when someone's operating like that, their perception of how much they have is also skewed. And so they don't experience having a lot even when they do.
Like it's never enough.
Right. Correct. Yeah. Correct. So in that particular case, our conversation led to them realizing that while they didn't argue, that they also wanted to enjoy life more together. And so they began, you know, once they understood what was operating, they began to, you know, every time I talk to them now, they're, you know, they're going out to a nice dinner, or they've gone away for the weekend, or, you know, something. And it's just such a wonderful transformation to see. And they're beginning to trust and have more fun with their money. Other couples, when they're opposites and there is a lot of tension, once they understand, you know, because if the love is there and the commitment's there, then once we shine a spotlight on the subconscious drivers, on, you know, like that first example I gave where he was overspending because he wasn't feeling appreciated by her, and they didn't know how to kind of, you know, and you know, she was feeling really critical when he overspent. So once we revealed what was really going on behind the scenes, it opened up a different, they began to see each other differently. So then it's not just, oh, he drives me crazy and he's just that way.
Yeah.
It becomes like, oh, wow, you know, there's something really important to him that he's not getting. How do I feel about that? You know, it becomes a whole other thing. So there's, you know, I'm all about possibilities, you know.
Wow. Well, Michelle, I'm just so thankful that you've been here with us today. And this is such a powerful conversation. And I know that there is so much more where this can go and so much more that you have to offer. So can you share with everybody? I know that you have a free gift for everyone. Can you share the details about that free gift?
Sure. I'm so excited about this gift to share this with you. So I'm licensed in this money archetype work, and it involves taking a quiz that fleshes out your money personality profile and some of the deeper drivers that we've talked about today. And what I've done is I through these years of making this connection between money and love, I took the money personality information for each archetypal profile, and I've converted it into the ways that your money personality may be playing out in your love relationships. And so when you take, so I'm providing the opportunity for everybody to take this new revised version to take the quiz with the revised results. And so you'll receive, in your results, both your money personality profile and then again, this detailed, set of results that involve both gifts and challenges and inquiries around how your money relationship is playing out in love. So it's exciting. Yeah.
Wow, that sounds amazing. Thank you. Everybody, you can find a link to Michelle's free gift. It's here on the page. It's right below the audio that you're listening to or the video that you're watching. Just click there and make sure that you take advantage of that. And Michelle, I want to thank you once again for being with us today. I really appreciate all of your insights and your tips and really enlightening everybody about this powerful connection between love and money. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. I'm so happy to be here. Thanks so much, Cami. Great talking with you.
Thank you. And everybody who is with us, listening or watching, I so appreciate you being here with us for the Ultimate Love Life Makeover Summit. And I want to remind you, if you want to listen back to this session again and again, make sure that you check out the VIP package. That way you can have Michelle's session as well as all of the content from all of our fabulous speakers. You can find out all the details by scrolling down below on this page, or you can go to ultimatelovelifemakeover.com/VIP. We appreciate having you with us, and we look forward to having you come back again for more of the Ultimate Love Life Makeover. Thanks so much, everybody. Take care.